Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:31 p.m. on Wednesday, March 2nd, 2022. And also that we have a quorum present today are Senator Bishop, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, and myself, Senator Rivak. Senators Stevens, Von Imhoff, and Machicki have been excused today. Staffing the committee today are our committee aide, Intimayo Harbison, LIO moderator, Nate Williams, and Juliana Singh from Records. Thank you, as always, for your support. Please turn off or silence your cell phones. For those on Teams, please mute yourselves until it's your turn to speak. On today's agenda, we have two items, SB 202, Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and SB 204, Hunting Permit Tag Auctions and Raffles. This is the first time these bills are before the committee, and we'll jump into them. Right now, we'll start with SB 202. We'll bring that before the committee, and presenting the bill today is my committee aide, or I'm sorry, my staff, Ms. Emma Torkelson. And online for questions, we have Mr. Curtis Thayer, the Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority, T.W. Patch, Director of Planning for the AEA, and Bill Thomas, a former legislator and the original author of this bill. This is a sunset extension. Ms. Torkelson, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation on the Renewable Energy Grant Fund extension.
Thank you, Ms. Chair Rivak and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rivak. SB 202 extends the authorization of the Renewable Energy Grant Fund and Recommendation Program, setting a new sunset date of June 30th, 2033. The Renewable Energy Fund program was originally established in 2008 with the passage of House Bill 152 and was later given a 10-year extension in 2012. In both of those cases, it was passed unanimously by the legislature. The REF is managed by the Alaska Energy Authority in coordination with a 9-member Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. Two senators serve on that committee along with two representatives and several other groups of people. Since its inception in 2008, the Renewable Energy Fund has distributed over $275 million in grant funds for qualifying and competitively selected renewable energy projects across the state. SB 202 amends 2008 session law as amended in 2012 to extend the sunset date to June 30th, 2033. The bill also sets an immediate effective date. The fund operates by sending out applications in rounds. These are open applications. Each submission is considered by the for its economic and technical feasibility, and then recommendations are sent to the advisory committee that then sends its recommendations to the legislature for approval. These REF grants have been supplemented by both federal and local funding to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. These combined funds help to stabilize and reduce energy costs for consumers by supporting renewable energy projects in both urban and rural communities across Alaska. As technologies improved, the available renewable energy sources have expanded, so too has the number of proposed projects. In this last application cycle, we received, or the Energy Authority received, 39 applications from around the state. As energy prices climb, it's important for Alaska to take advantage of all of our available sources of energy and heat, especially in our most vulnerable communities. The Renewable Energy Grant Fund is an important tool which supports Alaskan communities to meet their energy needs. I'm happy to take questions, and then we also have Curtis Thayer on the line who can give more specific answers to how AEA handles it.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. Do we have questions? Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks, and this is a question for Curtis or for you. If there's an idea of how much deferred fuel costs, how much of the deferred fuel has been for the last 10 years?
Mr. Thayer, if you're online, would you?
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Through the chair, the approximate savings since the inception of the program is about 30 million gallons of diesel fuel has been we've used as far in the primarily it's been displaced for renewable energy.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. We'll move on to invited testimony. We have former Representative Bill Thomas on the line. Representative Thomas, if you'd please put yourself on the record and tell us a little bit about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Bill Thomas, I served 8 years in the legislature, and this is one of my premium bills, but I also want to point out that when I filed this bill, Speaker Harris at the time, and I had the same idea, and so we kind of merged these two bills together. And so it was Speaker Harris's idea, my idea, merged together into one bill. And the idea was with the energy costs in rural Alaska, and we could, back then, we had money, but was the idea of trying to get the energy costs down into rural communities. As far as I know, it's been working. I know several of the villages in the southeast here have been able to get rid of 30% to 40% of the fuel costs by going on to renewable energy with hydros in southeast here. The program has worked, and I'm glad they keep extending it. Years ago, it was $50 million a year into renewable projects. That's been cut. And I believe, I don't want to say what governor it was, I don't like people mad at me, but they cut the fund. And so there is somebody to continue to go in there, which is great. And I think there's enough people in the audience or in the committee that remember several communities have wind energy, and if that combination of wind and hydro, and I believe several communities almost 100% are renewable energy now. So, and I can't remember the guy's name, but we've had a lot of effort through the past with the groups and organizations that supported this. I know that ITEC, Inner Passage Electric Co-op, really believes in this. They've been working with many, many villages in southeast here in getting hydros in here in southeast. So the bill is working. I'm glad it's looking out there, looking at extending it for another 10 years, and look forward to, I smile. I have to be honest, I smile every time somebody says we're on renewable energy. And just for a quick comment, I attended AFN years ago, and one of the older village people came up to me and said, "You're the energy man. We have renewable energy now." So things like that makes you kind of warm inside. But it was just an idea we had, and hopefully you'll renew the extended 10 more years.
Thank you, Bill. We really appreciate you being here to talk to us today. Thank you.
Thank you.
We are going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony for SB 202 is now open. Is there anybody in the room who would like to testify? I have Michael Revito. Michael, were you here to testify on HB 202?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, please put yourself, your name, affiliation, and 2 minutes, please, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Michael Revito, and I am Deputy Director of Alaska Power Association, or APA. APA is a statewide trade association for electric utilities in Alaska, and our members provide power to more than 500,000 Alaskans from Utqiagvik on Alaska, all throughout the interior and south central and down the Inside Passage. First, I'd like to say APA would like to thank Chairman Rivak for sponsoring this bill, and that APA is in full support of SB 202 and its goal of extending the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, and we strongly urge passage of the bill this session. Many of APA's electric utility members have received crucial funding from the Renewable Energy Fund since its inception, and these funds have supported the addition of renewable energy projects that have lowered reliance on diesel fuel, stabilize rates, and decrease the carbon footprint of electric generation. And as you heard a little bit earlier in the committee, there have been about 244 renewable energy fund grants totaling $275 million since the program's inception. Over 95 operating projects have been built using the fund. And like Curtis Thayer mentioned, that's, I think, savings of more than 30 million gallons of diesel fuel each year. So it's clear the Renewable Energy Fund is an extremely valuable program that has proven itself as worthy of continued operation. There's also numerous projects still under consideration for future rounds of grant funding from the fund. And these projects, as past projects have, will be chosen through a deliberative process run by Alaska Energy Authority and reviewed by the Renewable Energy Fund Advisory Committee. So by extending the sunset date of the program, electric utilities in Alaska will have certainty that the Renewable Energy Fund will be there as they continue innovating the various power systems of the state. So thank you once again, Mr. Chairman, and this concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Michael. Next, we'll move on to Curtis Thayer. Curtis, could you please put yourself on the record?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. A couple things I just wanted to highlight with the Renewable Energy Fund is there's currently 95 operational projects, of which we currently have 38 in development. And we have the, to date, the Renewable Energy Fund has provided $34 million onto Railbelt Project and $248 million into rural Alaska. And the matching funds to date that have been brought in because of this fund is $138 million. Last year, the legislature approved 11 projects for a total of $4.7 million, all for rural Alaska. And then this year, the funding mechanism for this year is with the excess earnings of the PCE program and the endowment. There's money set aside, obviously, for the PCE endowment, then $30 million for community assistance. And then the next cascading waterfall, so to speak, is $25 million to be divided three ways, whether it be used for rural powerhouses or capitalizing the revolving loan fund, as far as revolving loan fund for bulk fuel, or for the renewable energy program. And the governor has proposed in his budget $15 million out of the 25. 10 going to powerhouses, 15 going to the Renewable Energy Fund. So we went out with a round 14, and to date we have received, the period is closed, 39 applications, and for a total ask of $19.2 million. I think that as we go through the evaluation process, through the economics and the technical evaluation, that number and the number of qualified applicants will drop, but the $15 million is what we anticipate will be in FY23. So, and just as a point of reference, we did not receive funding for this program in FY16, 17, 18, 20, or 21. It was only started to be funded in 22 and in 23, and there was a little bit of money in FY19. So it is one that, as the state has experienced lean years, we've also experienced lean years with the program. But with the earnings of it, it was allowed to, or I say allowed to, but we were able to have $15 million put into the budget. Just as a historical of where we're going, hopefully this year, and that we will hope to have those recommendations to the legislature in April. So you can consider, you'll know exactly what those recommendations are for the $15 million ask that we have. So that was just a quick rundown of where we are today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thayer. Any questions? Yes, we have a question from Senator Kawasaki.
Yep, thank you. Just a question. What happens when a project fails?
Actually, through the chair, it's a very good question. The funding goes lapsed back into the Renewable Energy Fund, and that is actually how we funded Round 13. We had went through a process of closing out several of the outstanding grants and money that was not fully expended or projects that were canceled lapsed back into that fund, and that allowed us to ask for and provide the funding of the $4.7 million last year. So last year's ask was of lapsed funds. So we try to recycle the money, so to speak. That was the first year in the program's history that we were able to do that, but it at least allowed 11 projects in rural Alaska to move forward this year.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? All right. Thank you very much for being here with us, Mr. Thayer, today. Thank you for your testimony. Are there others online who would like to testify? Seeing none, is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on SB 202? All right, seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. Are there any comments or questions from committee members? So just to recap, this is simply extending the sunset to a program that already exists for 10 years. Sounds like a fantastic program. Sounds like we stand to lose some if we let it lapse. So with that, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate Bill number 202, which is 32LS1522/A as an Anchorage, be moved from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there objections? All right, seeing none, Senate Bill number 202 version alpha moves from committee with attached fiscal notes and committee recommendations. We're going to take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. All right, we're back on the record. We will now bring up SB 204 before the committee, and presenting again is my committee staff, Emma Torkelson. Welcome back. Online for questions, we have Eddie Grasser, the Director of the Division of Wildlife Conservation in the Department of Fish and Game, and Ms. Rachel Hanke, Legislative Liaison, Department of Fish and Game. Ms. Torkelson, please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation on SB 204.
Thank you, Ms. Chair Rebeck, and the Senate Resources Committee again. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rebeck. SB 204 builds on the success of the governor's auction and raffle tag program, which was originally put into place in 1997 and then expanded later in 2014. I'm prepared to go through the sectional analysis to highlight all of the changes that we are making, but I want to highlight that the increased revenue from SB 204's moderate expansion of available harvest permits for auctioning and raffling will ensure two important outcomes. First, it allows the department to maintain sufficient funds to continue their critical wildlife conservation and wildlife protection measures that have been the mainstay of wildlife management for decades. Second, we have a large increase in Pittman-Robertson grant funds coming our way, about $18 million of available funds, along with a large increase in firearms and ammunition sales, which boosted those numbers. ADF&G will need sufficient matching dollars in order to prevent those new Pittman-Robertson funds from lapsing or from reverting back to the federal government. This is not the first time that this sort of expansion has taken place. As I said before, in 2014, House Bill 161 made similarly sized increases to the max number of harvest permits that could be issued annually. And added several new species to the list. There was a noticeable jump in revenue that resulted back then, and we anticipate increases along the same lines with the possibility of a lot more coming in with Pittman-Robertson funds. Modern and effective wildlife management is becoming more expensive. For example, an increase of a couple of dollars to aviation fuel has a major impact on the survey and inventory operations, which in turn are a key element in setting game population and harvest objectives. Without accurate objectives, for instance, the Board of Game cannot make well-informed decisions on yearly hunting seasons and bag limits. In sum, SB 204 will allow more federal revenue to be leveraged for critical sustainable wildlife education and management programs and the proactive work needed to prevent new listings under the Endangered Species Act. SB 204 directly supports sustainable wildlife population, outdoor traditions, hunters, and outdoor recreation users. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, along with Eddie Grasser from the Department of Fish and Game, are happy to take questions or run through the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. We will run through the sectional analysis. Do you have any questions before we start? Okay, please begin with the sectional.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Rebeck. Section 1 amends AS 1605-343A, which is the partnership program where the department donates harvest permits, and the organization may raffle or auction them and keep 100% of the proceeds. So page one, lines 6 through 7, adds a Fognak and Raspberry Island herds to the type of elk harvest permits that can be donated by the department to be auctioned or raffled. Page one, line 6, reduces the number of harvest permits that can be donated as part of the partnership program for Edelin, Fognak, and Raspberry Island elk herds from 4 to 2. That was done at the request of department's biologists. And I will note that under this section, only 2 permits total will be available for either Edelin, Fognak, or Raspberry Island herds, the choice of which is up to the department. Page 1, line 9, adds the word wildlife in front of wildlife conservation. The new sentence will read that the nonprofits who qualify to receive these donations or donated harvest permits must be established to promote education in outdoor traditions and wildlife conservation and wildlife protection programs in partnership with the department. Section 2 amends 1605343C. This is the program where the department issues harvest permits to qualified organizations who then raffle or auction them off and then split the revenue between the department and the organization 70-30, department receiving 70% and organizations receiving up to 30%. Page 1, line 14 through page 2, line 4, removes the differing tag limits for individual species and allows up to 4 harvest permits to be issued for all of the listed species. With this language, the department retains the ability to decide how many permits, up to 4, they issue each year. Some years based on the health and health of the game population and the recommendations of their biologists, they may choose to issue fewer than 4 or none at all, and they retain that right. Page 2, line 1, adds emperor goose to the list of available harvest permits. Page 2, line 5 through 8, adds 4 McNeil River State Game Sanctuary bear viewing permits to be auctioned or raffled through the same process. This is more of a conforming change, so page 2, lines 12 and 13, and then page 3, lines 1, 2, and 5, removes the big game, quote, big game, from any mention of big game harvest permits, that all of the permits from here on out will just be referred to as harvest permits. Currently, there's 2 designations. Some are the big game populations are referred to as big game harvest permits, and then the others are just harvest permits. So we're eliminating the specification between the two and just using the broader harvest permits term for all of them. Page 2, lines 13 through 30 removes language and replaces it later in a new subsection outlining the 70-30 split between the department and organizations, and then limiting the use of funds to approve programs and prohibiting political or contributions to political campaigns. This language is put back in the statute as subsections F and G in later in section 4. Page 3, lines 3 and 4 changes the inscription on the hunting license issued under the subsection from governor's license to commissioner's license. Section 3 amends AS 1605343E. Page 3, line 11, adds that a nonprofit must promote education in wildlife conservation and conduct wildlife conservation programs in order to qualify as an organization that can conduct these raffles or auctions. The new requirement, this brings it in, makes it the same as the one listed above in Section 1. So we'll now read, the department may select a nonprofit organization that promotes education in outdoor traditions and wildlife conservation and that conducts wildlife conservation and wildlife protection programs. Section 4 adds new subsections. Page 3, lines 19 through 25 reinserts the language from above to create a new subsection F that requires that all of the revenue from the auction or raffle be paid to the Department of Fish and Game except an amount not to exceed 30%, which the organization can retain for the administrative costs of holding the auction or raffle and for projects approved by the department that support outdoor tradition, wildlife conservation, wildlife protection. this uses the same language as we've talked about before. Page 3, lines 26 through page 4, line 4, reinserts the language removed in section 2 again to create a new subsection. explicitly limiting the use of funds by the organization to approved programs listed in F, or subsection F, and prohibiting the use of any funds for candidates for political office, organizations supporting or opposing ballot measures, and expenses associated with lobbying the legislature or the administration. The only way that this language differs from the language removed in Section 2 is conforming language at the beginning, making appropriate references to their sections, and then going back to the page 3, line 19 through 25, the only change there is adding in the wildlife before conservation again. Lastly, page 4, lines 3 through 7, creates a new subsection H, which allows winners of the brown bear and doll sheep harvest permits to engage in the hunt, even if they've successfully taken a brown bear or doll sheep in the state in the 4 preceding years, or within the 4 years preceding. Finally, section 5 sets an effective date of January 1st, 2023. And that concludes the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Ms. Torkelson. And this, of course, is our bill, and we've worked very closely with the department and with the stakeholders and user groups. The purpose behind the intent here is that we find reasonable improvements on a very successful program that's brought a lot of revenues to our Department of Fish and Game and has also benefited some of the nonprofits who are directly doing some of the great work related to wildlife conservation and some of the studies, a lot of good things, education, but in many cases, 70% of those funds raised goes directly to our Department of Fish and Game, which is really beneficial. The intent is to get through public testimony, and then we're going to hold this and we'll work. You know, work as a committee if you have any questions now, we do have Eddie Grasser online from the Department of Fish and Game. Senator Bishop.
This could be either for Ms. Torkelson or she can punt to whoever. What was the thought behind changing it from governor's license to commissioner's license?
Ms. Torkelson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So right now, because it's named the governor's license, the governor's required to sign off on every permit that's issued to winners of raffles or auctions. Often a bunch of these permits are issued at once, and they often have very short windows for the winners to be able to complete the hunt. So this change would shift that responsibility and the associated time crunch to the commissioner, who's already very involved in issuing the licenses to begin with, and try to take that pressure off the governor's office to get these things signed off really quickly after they're passed out.
Thank you, Mr. Grasser. You have anything to add to that?
Mr. Chairman, not at this time. I think Ms. Torkelson did a good job of explaining that.
We'll follow up? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And we all know that it's a commissioner fishing game, but you know, that's something, should it be spelled out, Commissioner Fish? There's lots of commissioners.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, I think because this is under statute that's specifically overseen by the Commissioner of Fish and Game, or Fish and Game, and then there, because of that, the Commissioner of Fish and Game, then that's implied by that, but it is a good point. And Eddie might be able to speak more to whether or not that would be necessary to clarify.
Mr. Grasser?
I think, again, Ms. Torkelson, Mr. Chairman, did a good job. There's lots of statutes that I'm aware of that outside of Fish and Game that refers to just the commissioner. So I think it's very well implied, and it's kind of the way most other provisions like this are written.
And we will look into that specific, Senator Bishop as well. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just sort of a mechanical question. It looks to me like, and I want to make sure I'm understanding this right, that the department can donate under the bill 2 elk tags and 1 bison tag under A. And under B, there'd be an additional 4 elk tags and four bison tags with the cost share, or rather the revenue share program. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, yes. So they are separate programs. The first one, the partnership, the organization that raffles them off gets 100% of the proceeds. Section C, the revenue is split between the department and the organization. So yes, ultimately there will be four elk and four, up to four elk and four bison. If the herds can't sustain that, however, the department can issue fewer of those, though.
Just, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please, Senator Keel.
Follow up and make sure I've got the net correct. That the bill then brings the total absolute cap on elk permits down to six, but the total cap on bison, I think, goes up by one. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe so, yes. Up by one, and then down by two for elk.
And then one more, just
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a curiosity question. This language would list the Edelin, Fognac, and Raspberry Island herds in A. To my knowledge, we don't have any other herds. Is there a reason we wouldn't just say two elk?
Mr. Grasser?
Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Senator Keel. There are other islands in Southeast Alaska, like Zarumbo, that have elk on them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Additional questions? Brief at ease. Committee questions for Mr. Grasser or Ms. Torkelson or myself. All right, well, thank you very much for being here to testify. We're going to move on to public testimony. Public testimony on SB 204 is now open. We have a few folks online. We'll start with Kevin from the Alaska Wild Sheep Foundation. Kevin, you put yourself on the record and give us 2 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Kevin Kehoe. I'm the current president of the Alaska Wild Sheep Foundation. We're a 501c3 nonprofit corporation based out of Anchorage here. We have approximately 700 members, and we've been in operation since 2014. We'd like to lend our support to the current bill, 204. We think it's an excellent program. It's been successful in the past, and I think has already been covered in great detail, the fact that to us this looks like just evolutionary changes to tweak the program a little bit to make it even more successful than it's been in the past. I think I'm not positive, but I think the Wild Sheep Foundation probably has been able to participate in this program more than most organizations here in Alaska. Our record is such that I think over the years that we've been participating, we've been able to contribute almost $2.5 million to the Department of Fish and Game, which, of course, based on Pittman-Robertson match, would equate to almost $10 million of conservation on the ground. So once again, we strongly support this program. I won't take up any more of your time, but I think it's an excellent program, and it should continue, and these changes will help improve it.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for your testimony. Next, we'll move on to Janet Pasternak. Janet, please name an affiliation in 2 minutes.
Hi, my name is Janet Pasternak. I'm a private citizen, avid hunter and fisherman, and I reside in the city of Anchorage. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to voice my opinions and input in support of this bill, Senate Bill 204. I'd like to say first off that I'm a proud graduate of the BOW program, Becoming an Outdoors Woman, and have attended numerous nonprofit-supported outdoor classes. These educational programs were funded by and supported by nonprofit organizations such as the Outdoor Heritage Foundation and the Safari Club International. They taught me, as a woman from a non-hunting family, the traditions and ethics regarding how to hunt in Alaska. I could never participate in the life I now lead without the support from these programs. This bill would allow these wonderful nonprofit organizations the ability to raise a tremendous amount of money for conservation and education. In addition, it would offer resident hunters another opportunity to win a coveted tag that they might not have otherwise missed out on in the state lottery. One year, while volunteering at the Outdoor Heritage Table selling bison tags, I saw people plunking down hundreds of dollars to buy tickets for this tag, a bison tag. Fish and Game told me at that time they had annually only 35 to 45 bison tags available and over 36,000 hunters applying for them. Not very good odds for winning. But providing raffles and auctions for some of these tags would give folks just one more chance of hitting the jackpot. This is a win-win for education, conservation, and hunters alike. I would urge you all to support and pass this bill, as it can only help improve and support our cherished Alaskan tradition, hunters' education, and ethics. Please vote yes for this bill. And I'd like to thank Senator Rebeck for supporting and introducing this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Janet. Next, we will move on to Mark Richards. Mark, please name an affiliation and give us your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
For the record, my name is Mark Richards. I'm the Executive Director of Resident Hunters of Alaska. We want to offer our tentative support for this bill, but are going to hold off on fuller and written comments until we read the fiscal note and other documentation. We support ways to bring in more revenue to the Division of Wildlife Conservation, as long as it doesn't negatively impact resident hunters and their opportunities. I do want to stress, I really want to stress this strongly, that we don't want to ever see this extend beyond four tags per species. In other states, there have been pushes to increase revenues to fish and game departments by allocating more governor tags, which have resulted in loss of resident hunting opportunities. Governor tags don't really fall within our North American model of wildlife conservation and the user pay system, whereby everyone is equal in terms of license and tag costs and opportunity to hunt. Typically, it's the wealthier non-resident hunter who is able to bid and win these tags. We would feel a lot better about this bill if there was some kind of provision stating that it is the intent not to ask for more governor tag allocations down the line. There are other ways to raise revenues to the department that we have discussed with the commissioner and Director Grasser, and are happy to discuss with you in the future. We have been participating in the governor tag program for several years now, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have on how it works, what we do with our 30% of the revenue. Of course, we apply, as other ARGs do, for the most coveted tags, typically the sheep tags, but we have never been awarded a sheep tag, and frankly, likely never will be awarded one of those coveted sheep tags, because our organization, based solely in Alaska, is focused on resident hunting opportunities, and we can't bring in the dollars that the national ARGs that hold their banquets on the lower 48 do. I do want to state the department has instituted a newer resident-only Kodiak brown bear governor's tag, which we are thankful for and which we have received the past 2 years. We'd just really like to see some parity in how these tags are awarded and allocated to organizations. While the benefit passes mostly to the department, the real boon from this is going to go to the organizations that are awarded the coveted tags. And the big boon for them is the draw it creates to get people to their banquets and fundraisers to purchase tickets and tables and bid on other items. So in that respect, RAC is not going to benefit at all from this, but we do support increasing revenues to the department. We do feel there are better ways to do it. But again, for now, I want to thank Senator Rivak for introducing this bill, and we'll have written comments as we learn a bit more, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mark. Next, we will move on to Ted Spraker from Alaska Safari Club. Ted, name and affiliation and your testimony, please, sir.
Well, thank you, Senator. And for the record, my name is Ted Spraker. I'm the current president of the Kenai chapter of Safari Club International. And I'd like to thank the chairman and committee members for the opportunity to testify today. I am testifying on behalf of the Alaska chapter and the Kenai chapters of Safari Club International in support of the amended language for Senate Bill 204. The Kenai chapter is made up of about 700 or about 150 members, and the Alaska chapter has about 600 members. And the president of the Alaska chapter, which is Mr. John Sturgeon, submitted a letter. You should have that in your packet today to read. And if you haven't looked through that, I would encourage you to look at it. It's got some really good information about how the governor tags work. But one of the things I wanted to note was the success of the recent tag that they raffled for the sheep tag. It netted a little over $400,000. But the interesting thing about this tag and the funds it generated is that 53% of the funds that they generated came from out of state. So it's not just a matter of recirculating Alaska dollars. These are new dollars that come into our state that can be used for conservation and go to the Department of Fish and Game for management of game. Another thing that I wanted to comment on was I'm really pleased to see that you put in the emperor geese as a governor's tag for one of those tags. And also to visit McNeil River. And I'm not sure exactly how many people apply for McNeil River, but I looked up the one on Emperor Geese, and last year we had 2,721 applications for those 25 tags to hunt an emperor goose. And again, these are all non-residents because this is only a draw for non-residents. So again, that's all new money that comes into the state for wildlife conservation. And again, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify in the Alaska chapter, in the Kenai chapter of Safari Club International on strong support of the amended language of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted, for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Next, we have Sam Rohrer. Sam, please name an affiliation and your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Rivak and Senate resource members. My name is Sam Rohrer, and I'm the president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. My testimony today is in support of SB 204. And thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. The APHA strongly supports the proposed changes that this bill will bring to Alaska's Governor's Tag Program. This program has been highly effective at raising many millions of dollars for wildlife conservation in Alaska. And frankly, it's an excellent example of the benefits that all Alaskans receive when the state partners with Alaska's own conservation-based NGOs, like APHA. Funding management of Alaska's wildlife is based on a user pay model. We support this model, and we see SB 204 as just another part of the suite of policies that keeps funding of wildlife management in Alaska robust. Alaska's hunting guides are deeply vested in supporting wildlife conservation in Alaska, and our support for SB 204 is an expression of those values. I ask that you support this bill, and again, I thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you very much, Sam. Are there any other testifiers online? Would anybody in the room like to testify? All right. Seeing none, we're going to close public testimony. Public testimony on SB 204 is now closed. We do have Rachel Hanke online, the legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. I have a question for you, Rachel, or just a clarification if you're online. This program does not impact our regular draw program in any way. It won't reduce the opportunities for Alaskan hunters. I just want to make sure we understand that fully.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Rachel Hanke, legislative liaison for the Department of Fish and Game. That is correct.
Thank you, Ms. Hanke. Do we have any other questions? Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I guess two questions to follow up on yours to Ms. Hanke. If the department were to issue all of the bison permits under the cap, that's one more than is allowable to issue under the laws it reads today. That one additional bison wouldn't come out of the harvest, the draw for the area that the tag is issued for?
I would like to defer that one to Director Grasser, if I may.
Director Grasser, if you're still online, could you please put yourself back on the record and answer the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Eddie Grasser, Director of Division of Wildlife Conservation, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. The regular draw tags are allotted through the drawing program that we all know about that starts in November. We work closely with area biologists like Bob Schmidt and Delta to ascertain whether or not adding one more bison outside of the general draw would be detrimental to the overall health of the bison herd. And if they say wouldn't, we usually use that permit in the governor's auction tag program. However, in some cases, like this year, the tote tag was withdrawn because we had to reduce the number of resident tags available due to winter die-offs of that sheep herd in tote. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Keel, does that answer your question?
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Grasser. Additional?
The second question along those lines. I just want to get clarification. There was some discussion in public testimony that only non-residents can draw for emperor geese, and that emperor geese would then be in this program as well. But my understanding is that there's also a resident harvest available for emperor geese. Can you just clarify that for the record, please?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. That is correct. The draw permit system for emperor geese is resident only. Residents can hunt without having to draw a permit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Additional questions? All right. Seeing none, we're going to set this bill aside for future discussion. I would like to thank all the folks who called in to testify. Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your testimony. Director Grasser, Ms. Hanke, thanks for being here as well. The presenters, the committee staff, and LIF support, we appreciate you. Our next regularly scheduled meeting will be this coming Friday, March 4th, 2022, and we're going to have a presentation from Gaffney Klein on Alaska liquefied natural gas. This meeting is adjourned at 4:21.